Hello, this is Atta Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, December 23rd, 2025, coming to you from my home studio. I will apologize in advance. I've been at the tail end of fighting a cold here, and I may have some coughs and pauses and starts, but we'll get through this together. So on the front page, the top of the article is a beautiful color photograph, and the large headline, "A Full Meal Fits the Bill. Feeding wild birds in winter, a favorite pastime." And I'll describe the photo because it is striking and very, very beautiful. A downy woodpecker finds a snack at the bird feeders in front of the Rock Springs Nature Center observation window in Decatur on December 3rd. And so in the upper right corner of the photo is a feeder, and we see parts of two suet cakes in the feeder cages. And in the center and lower left is a beautiful black and white woodpecker with a patch of red on the back of its head. And it's just stunning. It's got a little piece of the suet on its beak, and it's angled at the very bottom of the feeder. And it's probably at a 45-degree angle in relation to the feeder. Just absolutely beautiful. Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review, photo credit. And the article here is by Valerie Wells. Decatur. Angela Davis has a deck where she keeps two bird feeders and also scatters seed on the deck surface for ground feeders because she wants to help the birds and also it's fun to watch them. "It's that or play Candy Crush," Davis joked on a recent trip to Garber Fields where she loaded up on bird seed. "A lot of people feed birds, especially in the winter," said retail manager Shelley Wallace, "and it saves the birds from using up energy and calories hunting for something to eat. All animals eat more in the winter if they can get it, and high-fat foods help keep them warm. Garver's makes its own seed mixes to sell and has a wide variety for various kinds of birds. Wallace keeps a stack of handouts with drawings of local birds and a list of what each species eats so people can buy the right mix for the kinds of birds that they'd like to attract. Cardinals and dark-eyed juncos, for example, prefer black oil sunflower seeds and safflower, while downy woodpeckers go for mealworms and suet. Sparrows are abundant all year and will eat just about anything, which is why they are abundant, but their favorites are black oil sunflower seeds and a millet corn mix. They also love suet. In summer, starlings eat mostly insects, but in winter, they make do with suet and will eat dry cat food as well. If you don't want squirrels to get into your bird's food, you have a couple of choices," said Beth Lane, a naturalist at Rock Springs Center. At the center, they put baffles on their bird feeders to keep the squirrels from being able to get the food outside the window on wildlife, where visitors can sit and watch the birds without startling the feathered diners, and because the window also looks toward the woods, you might see other wildlife as well. Or you can put out food specially for squirrels, which could include peanuts and corn, or blocks of food available at Garver's to set out for other backyard wildlife. Our feeders hang on a wire, and we have squirrel baffles on top of them. Because if you don't, the squirrels will eat your food, Lane said. If you don't want squirrels, make sure you have something up there. Rock Springs uses the tube feeders with perches in front of the holes where the food comes out, she said, which is what smaller birds prefer, and ground feeders like mourning doves will use platform feeders. They also put food on the ground for ground feeders, and squirrels will eat that, she said, and just because you only intend to feed birds, don't be surprised if you end up feeding deer, raccoons, and possums. Squirrels do hide food for winter and can subsist on their hidden caches, but if other food is readily available, they'll take it. Squirrels and raccoons don't hibernate, though they do hunker down, as she put it, and sleep more to save energy, a state called torpor, in which they might sleep for days or longer before coming out to hunt food and water. And water can be hard to come by in winter. A heated bowl will keep water from freezing when regular bird baths and are miniature ice rinks. Another way to help the wild things over the winter is to grow native plants in your yard, Lane said. Winterberry, dogwood, black-eyed Susans, When they lose their leaves, they keep the heads, she said. Coneflowers, chokeberry, sumac, not poison sumac, regular sumac, all of those types of plants, we leave the heads on because it's food for the birds and high in fat. We also don't deadhead anything here unless we're collecting seeds for replanting. The Decatur Audubon Society can certify your yard to allow areas of wildlife-friendly native plants, Lane said. I live in Niantic, and parts of our yard are just wildflowers that are mostly native, she said. I get so many pollinator insects and birds, it's a regular stop for them. The Society also sponsors a variety of activities designated to protect and care for birds and wildlife, from the annual Sangamon River cleanup to the December and spring bird count and various conservation and restoration efforts, many in partnership with other organizations. And some other beautiful photographs here. There's another one here with the downy woodpeckers. This one, though, is showing the entire suet feeder. It has a light yellow opaque top and a wooden slat in the middle, and then, of course, the two suet cakes on either side. And downy woodpeckers dine from the bird feeders at the Rock Springs Nature Center observation window in Decatur on December 3rd. And in this one, the background is blurred out, but in the foreground we see the downy woodpecker is on the right-hand feeder on the lower section, fully feeding, and on top of it, on the wire that's holding the suet feeder, is another downy woodpecker on the upper left corner of the photo, looking down at its meal. Retail manager Shelley Wallace and loader Michael Morales rearrange bird feeders at Garber Feeds. The store carries a wide variety of its own mixture of bird seed, as well as products of other wild things, dogs, cats, and other animals. And they're in front of the windows and the door, and there are a number of products on a lower shelf in front of them, and bird feeders above, and shelves above, and to the left. Valerie Wells, Herald and Review. And finally, the third photo is just stunning. A blue jay visits the Rock Springs Nature Center observation window, which is stocked with various feeders, making it a popular destination for birds, many birds, and even other animals. This Decatur on December 3rd. And so this is the blue jay's. It's resting on top of the wire that's holding. You can just see the clasp that holds a feeder below. We don't know what kind of feeder it is. But the underbelly of the bird is white, its feet are black, and of course it's blue back and tail feathers that are striped white and black, and then there's a ring around its neck like a scarf, black beak, blue head, peaked feathers, and then white, all the rest of it, and black eye, just beautiful. And what's really neat in the background, completely out of focus, but seen flying in the distance, is another bird. Can't make it out, but it's really a neat shot. Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review, photo credit. Air travel. TSA rule makes Home Alone 2 plot unrealistic. Rio Yamat, Associated Press. Panic erupts in the McAllister household as soon as the day begins. The parents' alarm clock never rings. Bags and coats spill across the floor, and the family barrels out the door to catch a flight to Florida. The pandemonium intensifies at the airport. There, the McAllisters must dodge fellow holiday travelers and luggage as they sprint to their gate while the final boarding calls echo overhead. Amid the mayhem, 10-year-old Kevin accidentally boards the wrong plane and finds himself alone in New York City just days before Christmas. More than 30 years after the Home Alone movie turned chaos, travel chaos, into comedy, the frantic opening scenes of the movie's 1992 sequel still hit close to home, especially as the busy year-end travel period gets underway. But would Kevin McAllister still end up in lost in New York in 2025? In an age of federal airport security checkpoints and digitized air travel, the fictional character played by Macaulay Culkin almost certainly wouldn't have gotten onto a commercial airliner by himself, said Sheldon Jacobson, who studies air travel operations and security and whose research contributed to the design of TSA PreCheck. In the 1990s, it was plausible, Sheldon said. It was close enough to plausible that people weren't rolling their eyes at it, but this would not happen today. Mix-ups less feasible. the September 11th, 2001 attacks fundamentally changed how Americans move through airports, ushering the creation of the Transportation Security Administration, government-run security screenings, mandatory ID checks, and restricted gate access. Before 9/11, travelers could head straight to their plane with little more than a paper ticket. Now every passenger and bag is screened, names are checked against flight manifests, and access beyond security checkpoints is tightly controlled. Even the paper tickets that made Kevin's mix-up possible are largely a thing of the past. In the film, Kevin frantically trails a man wearing a coat like his father's to the wrong gate at Chicago O'Hare International Airport, then crashes into an airline agent, sending both his ticket and a stack of boarding passes fluttering to the floor. Kevin explains that his family's already on the plane and he doesn't want to get left behind. "Do you have a boarding pass?" the agent asks. Kevin gestures to the pile of tickets and is ultimately allowed to board onto the plane. Today, boarding passes are tied to specific passengers, often stored on smartphones and scanned at the gate to confirm travelers are on the correct flight. The stricter unaccompanied minor policies and fees of airlines would add yet another layer of protection today, Jacobson said. In the movie, the gate agents walks Kevin down the jet bridge and asks if he spots his family on board. Kevin points to the stranger he's mistaken for his father. The agent waves him on, tells him to grab an empty seat, and that's that. Children flying alone. Unaccompanied minors are closely tracked today. Most carriers require children under a certain age, often 14 or younger, to be formally registered as unaccompanied minors if they aren't traveling with an adult, Jacobson said. That comes with special paperwork and airline staff members who are assigned to escort a child through the airport to their seat on the plane and off the plane at their destination. The Biden administration proposed a rule last year to ban airlines from charging families additional fees to sit together on flights and requiring them to seat children ages 13 and under next to an accompanying adult when adjacent seating is available at booking. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said this month he had no update on the proposal. Even if every current safeguard somehow failed, a passenger on the wrong plane would get noticed quickly, Jacobson said. Flight attendants review passenger counts and special service lists before departure. A 10-year-old boy missing from one flight and an extra child on another would trigger immediate alarms. In other words, the movie Magic holds up 33 years after Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, came out. The logistics do not, Jacobson said. We take for granted that we had those freedoms back then that we don't have today for good reason, he said. We had to give up those freedoms in exchange for other freedoms like safer air travel. Sheriff, phone scam lifted, lieutenant's name. We're on A2, the local page. Tony Reed Decatur has this article. The real Lieutenant Jamie Belcher with the Macon County Sheriff's Office is warning the public that he is not the person calling you and demanding thousands of dollars because you missed jury duty. A news release from Belcher said the Sheriff's Office has received calls from people complaining they have been called by a scammer claiming to be Belcher and demanding the payments for missed jury duty assignments. The caller tells the individual if they pay them several thousand dollars, they won't be arrested, said the real Belcher, who is, among other duties, is the Macon County Jail Superintendent. The caller goes even further to leave a callback number. When that number is called and the voicemail picks up, the recording says, "It is Lieutenant Jamie Belcher with Macon County Investigations." Belcher says anyone receiving such a call should just hang up and definitely not send money, and also warns of a second scam calling operation, this time involving the jail. Belcher says people have been targeted with calls from a man claiming to be a representative of pretrial services for Macon County. The caller says he is working to get an inmate in the jail released and payment is needed to make that happen. The scammer is using the name of individuals who are actually in the custody of the Macon County Jail, Belcher said. If you received a similar call, please hang up the phone and don't give out any personal information or send money to the caller's desired destination. If you have fallen victim to either of these scams, please contact your local law enforcement agency and file a complaint. Crews battle empty house fire in Decatur. Tony Reed, Decatur firefighters said they needed a heavy volume of water to knock down a blaze that burned up an empty house early Sunday in the 1600 block of East Hickory Street in Decatur. Deputy Fire Chief Brian Lockwood said his crews had been called to the boarded-up single-story home at 4:41 a.m. Upon arrival, firefighters encountered heavy fire throughout the house and fire venting through the roof and several windows, he added in a statement. As crews arrived on scene, and with no indication of occupants, defensive firefighting tactics were implemented. Lockwood said the aim was to contain and stop the flames spreading until the blaze was finally beaten back and put out using a deluge of water. The swift and coordinated efforts of crews ensured the protection of adjacent buildings and minimized the risk to public safety, Lockwood said. No injuries were reported in the incident, and the cause of the fire remains under investigation. Also in local, here on A3, Coles County, woman dies from crash injuries. Her husband died at the scene of multi-vehicle interstate collision. Rob Stroud Mattoon, a Chicago woman, has died from injuries sustained on December 13th in a seven-vehicle crash on Interstate 57 north of Mattoon that killed her husband. The Champaign County Coroner's Office reported Alicia J. Barks, 42, was pronounced dead at 11:48 a.m. Saturday at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. The Coles County Coroner's Office earlier reported her husband, Matthew A. Seamer, 43, died at the scene of the crash, which occurred during a winter storm. Organizers of a GoFundMe page for A.J. Barks Medical Care reported that after days of intensive care and every possible effort by her medical team, it became clear that her injuries were too severe for her to recover. At this time, AJ is being lovingly cared for as she carries out one final extraordinary act of generosity. She is donating her organs so that others may have a chance at life. This decision reflects the very best of who AJ was, deeply compassionate, selfless, and always thinking of others, the page reported. Marissa Seamer, sister of Matthew Seamer, told the JGTC that their family was in Chicago on Monday for the honor walk for AJ, who donated her organs. She dedicated her personal life to Matt, her family, her beloved dogs Cora and Opal, and the vast network of friends near and far, Marissa Seamer said. Her passion was helping others through her work at Chicago Women's Healthcare and bringing smiles and joy and thoughtfulness to all. Barks was the interim executive director of Chicago Women's Health Center, a nonprofit that provides health care access to women and trans people. Matthew Seamer served as executive director of Mobile Care Chicago, a nonprofit that turns old RVs into mobile medical units that provide care to underserved communities in the Chicago area. The Mobile Healthcare Association posted over the weekend that he was known for his warmth, generosity, and compassion. Through his leadership, he transformed Mobile Care Chicago, expanding access to pediatric asthma care, dental services, and essential health care for thousands across the Chicagoland area, the association reported. And there is a provided photo by the Chicago Sun-Times showing Matthew A. Seamer, 43, of Chicago, and Alicia J. Barks, 43. Kwanzaa celebration to be held December 27th. This article is by Donette Beckett. Decatur, the African American Cultural and Genealogical Society of Illinois, Inc. Museum will host the 30th annual Kwanzaa Community Celebration from 4 to 6 p.m. Saturday, December 27th. It will be held at the Decatur Township Office Building, 1620 South Taylorville Road, Decatur. The theme this year is Nia, or Purpose. Guest speaker will be David Horn, Millikan University professor and Decatur City Councilman. Through presentations from various community members, the program will feature the traditional lighting of candles and reciting each principle for the 7 days celebration. The late Reverend Ezra West and Waverly Waller will both be honored with a special tribute. For more information, visit african-americancultural.org or call 217-429-7458. On state page A5 here, Pope taps Joliet Bishop to be next Archbishop of New York. Articles by Evie Lewis, Daily Southtown, Tinley Park. Joliet Bishop Ronald A. Hicks is Dalton-born Pope Leo the 14th's choice for the next Archbishop of New York, according to a report in the National Catholic Register. Hicks, 58, who was born in Harvey and raised in South Holland, has led the Diocese of Joliet since September of 2020. The Diocese of Joliet consists of 117 parishes, representing more than 500,000 Catholics in DuPage, Will, and Grundy, Kankakee, Iroquois, and Ford counties, and covers a geographic area of more than 4,200 miles. The current Archbishop of New York, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, has served in that position since 2009 and turned 75 this year. Bishops are required to send a letter of resignation to the Pope when they reach the age of 75, and the Pope may either accept the resignation or allow them to continue serving. Chicago Cardinal Blaise Kupich, 76, submitted his resignation last year, but it has not yet been accepted. During his childhood in South Holland, Hicks attended St. Jude and Apostle Parish in grade school. Through a series of parish consolidations by the Chicago Archdiocese, St. Jude eventually merged with Pope's home church, St. Mary of the Assumption in Riverdale, to become Christ our Savior in South Holland. Hicks graduated from Quigley Preparatory Seminary South in 1985, according to his official biography on the diocese website. He earned a bachelor's degree in philosophy from Loyola. He has a master's and doctorate in divinity from the University of St. Mary of the Lake in Mundelein. Hicks was ordained a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago on May 21, 1994. He was an associate pastor at Our Lady of Mercy Parish in Chicago from 1994 to 1996 and at St. Elizabeth Seton Parish in Orland Hills from 1996 to 1999. From 1999 to 2005, he lived and ministered at St. Joseph College Seminary in Chicago, according to the diocese website. Like the Pope, who served at Bishop of Chiclayo in Peru and is a naturalized Peruvian citizen, Hicks has lived and worked extensively in Latin America. Hicks moved to El Salvador in 2005 with the Archdiocese's blessing to begin a five-year term as regional director of Nuestros Pequeños Hermanos, an organization that runs a home dedicated to caring for more than 3,400 orphaned and abandoned children in nine Latin American and Caribbean countries. Hicks, like the Pope and Kupich, has expressed concerns about recent federal immigration enforcement actions in the Chicago area. He issued a statement in November voicing his support for a special message from the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops that condemned raids throughout the country. Here's a fun little insertion on the Life page. There's a stylized Christmas tree with it's a animated one by Jacinta Myers, illustration Lee Enterprises. And the girl drawing, sitting cross-legged on the floor in her pajamas, red pajamas, holding her teddy bear. She's drawing snowmen with her crayons. And on the table in the forefront, various cookies, gingerbread man shown, cup of hot cocoa and a bow. And it says, "For Santa. Dear editor, I am 8 years old. Some of my little family friends say there is no Santa Claus. Papa says if you see it in the sun, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus?" Virginia O'Hanlon, 115 West 95th Street, New York. In 1897, New York Sun editorial writer Francis Farcellus Church offered this answer to a skeptical child. "Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except what they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant, in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole world, whole of truth and knowledge." And in cursive red and much larger typeface, it reads, "Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus." And now we go back to the regular typeface. "He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there was no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance, no to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal life with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus, but even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not. But that's not proof that they are not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders there are unseen and unseeable in the world. You may tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside, but there is a veil covering the unseen world which not the strongest man nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernatural beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world, there is nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus. Thank God he lives, and he lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood. And on B8, the weather page, crowd greet solstice at Stonehenge, Associated Press, London. Thousands of people cheered and danced around Stonehenge as the sun rose over the prehistoric stone circle Sunday, the winter solstice. The crowd, many dressed as druids and pagans, gathered before dawn, waiting patiently in the dark and cold field in southwest England. Some sang and beat drums, while others took time to reflect among the huge stone pillars. Many make the pilgrimage to the stone circle every summer and winter and consider it a spiritual experience. The ancient monument, erected between 5,000 and 3,500 years ago, was built to align with the movement of the sun on the solstices, key dates in the calendar for ancient farmers. English Heritage, the organization that manages Stonehenge, said about 8,500 people celebrated Saturday at the monument on Salisbury Plain, about 75 miles southwest of London. It added that its live stream of the festival drew over 242,000 views from around the world. Sunday is the shortest day of the year north of the equator, where the solstice marks the start of astronomical winter. It's the opposite in the southern hemisphere, where it's the longest day of the year and summer will start. The winter solstice is when the sun makes its shortest, lowest arc, but many celebrate it as a time of renewal because after Sunday, the sun starts climbing again and days will get a little longer every day until late June. And the people dressed are dressed as they said in the article, very many costumes. And photo credit by Andrew Matthews, PA. And with that, that brings us to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, December 23rd, 2025. We'll take a short break, return with the second half hour.